go ahead and call the meeting to order. This is the March 14th meeting of the 2013 series of Citizens Involvement Committee meetings. Welcome to you all tonight. Glad you could make it. Our first agenda item after the call to order is the minutes of the last meeting, which was Thursday, January 17th, 2013. The packet should contain attachment 2A, a summation of the minutes, and once you have a chance to review it, we will entertain motions for approval or corrections as necessary.
Mr. Chair, I move we accept the minutes.
All right, we have a motion for Mr. Mackey, second for Mr. Baker, to accept the minutes of the January 17th, 2013 meeting as submitted. Any discussion on the motion? If there is none, all those in favor of accepting the motion as opposed, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. The minutes are approved as submitted. Next up will be the technical progress report, and Curtis will fill us in on the contents of the latest news.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To really keep this brief, there are kind of three things I wanted to talk about. First of all, our Connecting Communities Planning Grant, we had originally decided, thought we were going to bring that to the committee in May, but in March. But had decided that after looking at how full our agendas were, we decided to hold off until May for the final decision. So as you remember, those are two $50,000 planning grants. The Connecting Communities Task Force that helped select those grants did meet, and we did rank all the projects, but we felt like it was made more sense to bring it in May just because we were not quite as busy. We've got some preliminary scorings on those grants, but we have not yet finalized those, and we will bring those to the committee in May. Also, I want to let everyone know we're going to have our first bike and brainstorm of the season in Kent on April 20th. And what time is it at?
It starts at 9:30, and the ride will actually begin at 10 and go till about 11, and we'll have a discussion at from 11 to 12.
Yeah. So, and if any of you remember, our bike and brainstorms is where we kind of select a location, do a 6 to 10 mile ride around the community, and then reconvene to discuss sort of what improvements could be made to make bicycling a little bit easier in the area. This one's pretty exciting because if any of you haven't been to Kent recently, the downtown has been almost reimagined completely, and we're actually going to be starting this ride at the Kent Central Gateway, and it'll be a 10-mile ride that is going to go through number of parts of the neighborhood, and then we're going to reconvene at the Kent Central Gateway and discuss it. So it's our first bike and brainstorm of the season. We're looking forward to having, I think, at least three or four more during the season, but we're very excited about it. Also, we're all beginning our bicycle counting as well as our traffic counting. We'll start later this spring or early summer. So we do have an opportunity to get some more data in terms of who's walking, who's biking, and all that kind of good stuff. And finally, I did want to introduce Liz Denholm is here. She is AMAC's new secretary. So if you do stop by the office, which, Bill, I know you've been known to do, this will be the face that you see when you walk in the door. And
always,
she's been
always have coffee around.
Yeah, he's always demanding coffee. But I think, Liz has already been a great part of our staff, and we're excited to have her. And so it's a good opportunity for you guys to kind of put a face with the name. But other than that, that's what I have for the technical progress report. I'd be happy to answer any questions if there are any.
The two winners on the grants, again, two cities?
Yes.
Were what, please?
The two winners, it's not official because we haven't taken it, but right now the top scored grants, number one is Barberton, looking at 2nd Street and downtown and kind of connecting the towpath to the downtown of Barberton. Ranked number two is our best friend Montrose, and looking at Copley and Bath and Fairlawn did a joint application, and we're hopeful that you know, while there are still some areas of, you know, what you'd say, sort of discontent or discussion, the focus of the Montrose area is more about, you know, we know in Montrose, you know, transit riders are getting dropped off in areas of ditches and no sidewalks, and we don't need a lawsuit to keep us from kind of analyzing that segment of the Montrose area, so that's the purpose there. Both communities have applied all 3 years of the grant, and so I think also, you know, they've put together good applications, and I think it's appropriate that they scored the highest in terms of the quality of the application. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you, Curtis. There was one item that's Patrick D.C. talking about, the new statewide CMAQ.
Yes.
Is there anything new on, you know, this concept of blending all these sub-allocated funds and, you know, the whole topic that created the stir there at the last...
Yeah, there's been a little bit of progress, Mike. I think that the good news is that all the MPOs have gotten together and agreed that instead of trying to, like you said, blend all of the funding policies together, the idea is that we should still control the process at the local level. So communities, right now the discussion is the communities will apply to their MPO, the MPO will score them, rank them, and then kind of send them up to Columbus, or send them down, in our case, to Columbus. Columbus will then, you know, and then the collective eight MPOs, the idea is that we still will estimate our allocation, you know, so it's around $5 million. We'll still recommend that amount of projects to be funded, and then the purpose of sort of the central unit will be to, if projects fall by the wayside, we'll have a sort of central agency that can look at determining which projects could kind of take their place in the process. So I think the positive news is that I think that most of the MPOs have decided that we want to try to keep that same similar allocation with that MPO. So the idea is that next round of funding, AMATS will still have about $5 million that can be, you know, CMAQ dollars that can be applied for. There'll just be an additional step where it will go to sort of like the bigger pot, and we'll sort of arrange it in a way to make sure that no projects fall through. And I think what ODOT has kind of conceded on is what they really want is to make sure that no project slips and then we have a carryover balance. So the idea of this program is that if, say, a project in our area wasn't going to get completed in the year we said, maybe a project in Toledo could fill its spot, but that wouldn't mean that the Akron area project would fall off the books completely. It would mean it would just slip back a year and when it was actually ready to be funded. So as a staff, we're pretty happy with how this has been developed. There's a few new wrinkles, but I think overall we feel like we'll still have control over our CMAQ program.
So Mayor Klein had told me he had the concern about his ability to commit the contractors mm-hmm. and have the dialogue about getting the project done at the local level
right.
with outside parties.
Yeah. One of the first things they did was say any project that's already been programmed has guaranteed funding. So at this point, for Mayor Klein's specific purpose, he is guaranteed to get that CMAQ funding, so that's not in doubt anymore. I think the whole purpose of this program from ODOT's eyes now is just to make sure that of the $60 million that the MPOs get every year, we spend every penny of it that year. You know, so it's incumbent upon us for our $5 million to make sure we select projects that will take place, that will happen, and will be completed in the year that they're required. If we drop the ball on that, then we could potentially lose a little bit of funding in that year. But the way it's looking now, I would say, talking to, you know, Jason and I have been talking about it, it's really very friendly to the MPO, and ODOT appears to be willing to let us slide through with that sort of framework. So we're, I would say, optimistic at this point.
That's good. Okay. If there's nothing nothing else or any questions under that topic, we'll move on to staff presentations. Item 4 on the agenda, we have two major things. First up will be the draft transportation outlook 2035, which is actually in your packets under 4B. And Curtis and Crystal will present some additional information under that item.
Yeah, I'm going to kind of take the big picture and then slide over to Krista, let her handle sort of the details of what's in the packet and the list. So as many of you know, one of the big charges of a metropolitan planning organization from the federal government is every 4 years we must develop a long-range transportation plan. And that long-range means we have to look out at least 20 years and come up with policies and project recommendations of what we think are regional priorities in our area. So basically what we want to do is, you know, and in that plan, the one big thing that I think makes it important to all of our members is that if you want federal dollars to be spent, if you want federal dollars for your project, it has to be identified on the plan or be consistent with the plan. So it's the one tool that MPOs have to sort of help guide the funding process of what we want to invest in and what we think are regional priorities. So basically what AMATS is charged with doing every 4 years is developing a plan as policies and recommendations, and if you know you're consistent with that plan, if your project kind of fits in with what our big picture is of what we think the region should be doing over the long term, you are eligible for federal funding. So one of the things we want to do is kind of get into the details, a little bit of the plan, and talk about, we didn't print out the plan. The plan's about 100 pages long. We did put it on the website if you want to read it. It's got a lot of background information, a lot of data. What we thought we could do is just sort of talk through some of the main points of the plan and some of the big data things that we've collected over time. So basically, you know, the things that we uncovered as we do this analysis is, one is, you know, certainly we always look at population and employment and demographics. And the population of our region really has slowed almost to a halt when you look at the overall region of Summit, Portage County, and Chippewa Township in Wayne County. So over the last 10 years, between 2000 and 2010, our overall growth rate was 1.2%. So a very slow growth relative to the United States, which I think is roughly 6 or 7%. Portage County grew a little faster. Summit County actually lost population in the last census. Over the next 20-some years, we're forecasting that our growth rate will be around 2.8%. So population, and most of that, honestly, is being carried by Portage County, which is growing at a steady clip of about 6%, and Summit County looks like it's more going to be staying the same or not really, you know, maybe a little increase, but not a whole lot. So our population, you know, is stagnant. And usually what that means is that traffic counts, we don't expect to see a whole lot more congestion than we do today because there's going to be, you know, just as many people, if not less people driving in the future than what we see right now. So when we look at employment, the interesting thing about employment is that Akron and the greater Akron area has actually done a very good job of weathering the storm in terms of the Great Recession. I mean, everybody lost employment, everybody's unemployment rate went up, but Akron overall has done a fairly good job of sort of maintaining where they've been in terms of, when I say that, I mean the region, Summit and Portage County. And so when we look at that and forecast it over time, we really see closer to a 14% growth in employment. So we see, right now we have roughly 300,000 jobs, and we see that increasing, not substantially, but I think at a pretty good clip. What that means basically is with employment stall or population stalled and employment sort of speeding up or at least growing, so we do expect more workers and more trips to be coming from outside the two counties. So more people who are living outside of our area will be driving into our area to work, which in some ways is a very positive thing. But then, so we kind of know, you know, from that perspective, we're sort of flat. I think the employment is somewhat positive. And the other thing that we looked at is our funding situation. And as many of you who follow sort of the transportation issues of the day, funding is a really hot topic at the federal level, at the state level, and at the local level. At the federal level, the trust fund basically is broke. The only reason there's any money in the trust fund is due to general revenue that's been infused into the trust fund. With sequestration, there is a possibility that even that money could be limited. So the federal level is really struggling in terms of having funds for infrastructure improvements. At the state level, when you look at the state's major new program where they have recommended a number of large new projects, both for preservation and congestion issues, they basically have way more funds committed than they actually have. And what we're looking at right now is the state can't fund all those projects through even 2036, so well past our horizon here. And then at the local level, we see the locals kind of being the last line of defense for keeping our roads the way they are. And the locals are obviously cash-strapped for a number of different reasons, from the state funding, the local government fund drying up, to all a number of other issues that I think, you know, make it difficult for local governments to fund our infrastructure. So with those things in mind, I think it makes it very challenging. So when we look at other issues that we've looked at, like land use, you know, one of the things that we've identified is basically that because the employment's because the population is growing so slowly, and employment is a little bit better, and we have no funding, though, the reality is that we can't keep growing the way we have over the past 50 or 60 years. The idea of, you know, a lot of you know the term sprawl, but this idea of large lots, single-family homes, you know, winding streets of concrete and asphalt, we basically, local governments can't afford to maintain what they have, so building new is a very dangerous precedent at this point in time because the funding's just not available. So, and then the other thing that we comes with kind of following the existing land use patterns is that transit becomes harder to, you know, it's harder to serve people with transit. We have an aging population. A lot of our population is baby boomers that are aging. Demand response for transit service becomes a really, really big deal in terms of being able to get people to their doctor's appointments that can't drive or to the shopping, to grocery shopping and all those things. So we feel that like the land use issue is very prominent in terms of how we're going to develop over the next 20 years. Finally, another issue that we talked about quite a bit was the environment. As many of you probably remember, climate change 4 years ago in our regional transportation plan was a pretty big issue. We address it in this plan more saying that, you know, whether climate change or not exists, you know, Amex is doing a number of things to reduce greenhouse gases as well as prepare for major weather events. So, you know, there's no doubt that in the last couple of years, especially a good example is Streetsboro, where 303 floods consistently. That is an area that, you know, the more it rains and the more weather events we have, 100-year storms, all that stuff, we have to be, you know, considering that as we look for project recommendations and what we can do to sort of build an infrastructure system that is less negatively impacted by stuff like that. So those are sort of some of the issues that we looked at. And I think a lot of those issues kind of tended to then feed into what our priorities are as an organization and what priorities you see in the plan. So the first priority of the plan that is by far, I think, the highest priority is the idea of fix it first. So maintenance of our existing system is the priority. Maintenance of roads as well as maintenance of transit. We want to make sure that the transit system stays as strong as it is today 20 years from now. Obviously, because of the revenue issues, preservation is getting harder and harder for local communities. Our roads are slowly declining, and being able to fund resurfacings, reconstructions, all those things are a challenge. So another priority of AMETS is to look for additional revenue sources for funding federal transportation as well as state. 2 years ago, about 2.5 years ago, we passed a resolution to increase the gas tax by 10%. Obviously, that hasn't happened, but the agency still feels like we need to develop some sort of revenue source that is going to allow us to not sort of strap the local governments with the whole burden of keeping our roads maintained. So that's another priority. Also, Annex feels very strongly that we need to promote alternative forms of transportation. So transit, walking, biking, those things are all important in terms of a dynamic, effective transportation system. We want to focus on complete streets and integrated land use. I think one of the things we talked about Montrose a little bit earlier that we think is really important is when you get off the bus, you know, having a sidewalk there so that you're not being dropped off into a muddy ditch or you're not being dropped off into an area where you can't get where you need to go. Twinsburg is a great example. There's a lot of employment in southern Twinsburg, a lot of big facilities. Metro tries to serve it. There are no sidewalks anywhere. When they drop people off, you know, especially in the snowy times of the year, they're really walking in the street where we've dropped, you know, salt and all that stuff, and it's not a safe environment for pedestrians. So one of the things we really want to focus on is infrastructure improvements that sort of work together in the same mold. So, you know, a sidewalk that would not only help a pedestrian but also help a transit rider get to that last mile from the bus stop to where they need to go. Annex has also been promoting shared services. You'll see an item on the agenda later in the agenda about the pavement condition ratings. We talked about this last time at the last CIC meeting. Really feel like there's a lot of economies of scale to be gotten from working together, going in cooperatively for certain purchases and certain services, and Amex can continue to be on the forefront of that. And finally, you know, and this has been a big priority of Jason, who a lot of you know, our director, is that we really want to make sure that we are a transparent agency and that, you know, we really focus on public involvement. So whether it's using our website, using Twitter, Facebook, putting ads in the newspaper, you know, getting back to people timely in a timely manner. We really feel like as an agency, the best thing we can do for the public is try to be as transparent as possible, as open as possible, you know, have meetings when they're convenient for people, places where they're convenient for people, and really make sure we get the public comments that we need to make us feel like our long-range plan really meets the needs of all of our citizens. So I think that's a big priority. And now I'm going to kind of let Krista take it the rest of the way, talking specifically in your packet. There's a lot of tables and maps about recommendations, and she'll talk about that in a little bit.
Thank you. So I think, you know, like Curtis said, what we're really seeing is the kind of these trends and policies are really reflected in the recommendations of the plan. So, you know, every recommendation in the plan has to be fiscally constrained. So, you know, what we've kind of been doing over the past couple months is, you know, we have the forecasted revenues, you know, what it will cost to preserve the system, and then, you know, like how we can, what projects can we fit into that budget. So everything has to be, you know, inflated in year of expenditure. So, you know, the amount of money that we can actually fund projects with, you know, current year dollars, but then you put it out, say, to 20, you know, 25, and with inflation, you know, our purchasing power just, you know, starts to diminish fairly drastically. So one thing, the previous plan, Transportation Outlook 2030, you know, we had 58 highway recommendations. This plan, we have 26. And a lot of that is because the majority of our, about half of our money is going strictly to preservation. You know, so we just have way less money for our highway projects. So total highway projects, we have $4.3 billion in highway investment. And like I said, we have $2.5 in preservation. So almost half our money right off the top is going strictly to, you know, it goes to repaving, and it also goes to bridge replacements. You know, so just to keep things as they are between now and 2035, that's what the money's going to. And then the remaining 26 projects, we have about $300 million going towards freeway recommendations and $118 million going towards the rest of the roadway system. And part of that freeway recommendations are ODOT has a large program of their large major new projects are called TRAC. And they have two projects in our area. Both are along 76. One is the Central Interchange, you know, which is 76-77 where it crosses Route 8, and the other one is the main Broadway interchange and 76-77. So, you know, like both those major interchanges right in Akron are major, you know, congestion issues, safety, freight, and so those are on ODOT's major projects. And so that's what's kind of, for as far as the freeway recommendations, taking a lot of money. A lot of the other roadway projects, we have very few capacity adding, you know, so additional lanes, that sort of thing. A lot of them are safety operational improvements that are just working to improve the flow of traffic and, you know, turn lanes, make lighting, making things safer. So I think, you know, the trends that Curtis discussed, we really see reflected in what projects communities are applying for, because communities aren't applying for extra lanes or additional capacity. They're applying for projects that are just kind of keeping their system the way it is and, you know, maybe making a few adjustments. So if you look at, I believe it's 4B in your attachment, you'll see the highway recommendations, and that's just a map of the blue are the freeway, and the red ones are the other highway, mainly intersection and arterials. For the transit recommendations in the plan, we have about $1.7 billion in public transportation investment. And similar to highway, you know, kind of the fix it first, the main priority is, you know, keeping the existing transit system the way it is. After that, the priority is increasing ridership and levels of service, and that's mainly through, like for Parga and Portage County, it might be additional weekend service. And for Metro, I think a lot of what they're trying to do to increase ridership is more frequent service. So along the Market Street route, you know, having the buses come at a more frequent rate, that kind of service. We're also looking at a lot of different ways, you know, to talk about cross-county service and coordination. Currently, there are, you know, Metro goes into Cuyahoga County and Parga comes into the transit center in Akron. But, you know, it's sort of limited cross-county service. You know, I think the more and more we see people going different places and, you know, as our employment and region expands, we're going to need, you know, that's going to continue to be a service that's needed. You know, a lot of the transit is funded through county sales tax. So I think the issue is, you know, keeping the county borders are very important to transit agencies, but that will be, you know, it's important to, you know, employment and housing and, you know, like doctor's appointments don't follow county boundaries. So seeing those will be an issue. Also, Metro owns significant rail lines. You know, so we have some money just to preserve those. Right now, there are no plans to do anything with them, but just some funds to help, you know, pretty much preserve the right-of-way for either potentially multi-purpose trails or rail in the future. For bicycle and ped, we have approximately $30 million of investment. For the first time, those of you that have been with us, you know, we mainly funded multi-purpose trails. So, you know, like the hike and bike, the towpath. This time we have on-road bike improvements, which could be anything from signage to bike lanes, and we also have pedestrian improvements. We have specific areas for sidewalks. And if you look at the map in the packet, you know, it lists in the table, you know, we have specific improvements listed, but anything that's increasing the bike and pedestrian facilities in our area is consistent. So even if it's not on that map, you know, say if a community wanted to apply to us for funding for, you know, a need that came up or they wanted to do a sidewalk project, they could still apply to us for funding. Other things we're trying to, you know, encourage in general pedestrian-friendly design, which would be things, you know, like, you know, when you get out of the car, you know, having the buildings up close to the street, feeling safe. It could be, you know, just having a sidewalk there. It could be potentially having benches or street trees or, you know, just thinking about how you feel like once you're out of the car, either when you're on the bike or ped. And then also we've been doing, like Curtis mentioned, more bike counting and just seeing, you know, how are different areas increasing and bike and pedestrian counts, but also comparing our area to other areas to see how we're doing. So a lot of the programs, the Switching Gears website, as he also mentioned, the Bike and Brainstorm that we're going to be doing in Kent, just different ways to promote cycling and alternatives is a, you know, kind of a big thing in this plan. And like I mentioned before, we have two maps, one of the bike improvements, the on-road, and then the multi-purpose trails. And then we also have a pedestrian recommendation map which shows in the black the existing sidewalk network, which we did a comprehensive inventory of, and then also the red is the new proposed projects. And then lastly, you know, we're trying to do a fairly robust public involvement period. You know, we regularly get to talk to all of you about, you know, what your thoughts are and what we need and what we're missing, but we're also trying to engage other people, you know, mainly through the website and social media. But we will also have two public meetings. You know, if you can come, that would be great, or if, you know, you can give us your comments at this meeting or, you know, anytime, calling me or emailing. But on March 9th, we'll have another meeting here, and then on March
8th.
I apologize. Those should not say March. And then on April 18th at the Kent Tree Library, we'll have another public meeting. And those will cover both the plan and our transportation improvement program, which we're also updating. And then the final draft, the entire thing, is on the website. If you'd like a full printed copy, contact me, and we can definitely mail you one. But other than that, you know, I think what we're really looking for is just if you have comments on the projects, if there's things we're missing, and then also sort of, you know, major topics that, as an agency, what we should be addressing in the future. And with that, I think that's, you know, we've bored you enough with the inner workings of what's in the 100-page document. So we'll be quiet and open it up for discussion.
I have one question. Anybody else?
Mr. Snowpen?
Have you all looked at, do you have any studies, or have you even just broached the subject of conversion of paved surfaces to gravel or a surface like that in terms of savings in the future?
Most of the roads that we deal with are on the federal functional classification system, which are mostly, you know, there are major arterials, minor arterials, and collectors. The idea of kind of going back to gravel, usually those streets are more local roads, so I would say that the county engineer, per se, might be looking into that, but we haven't really explored that as much because most of our roadways, being on the functional classification system, usually based on traffic volumes, need to be paved. The issue of going to gravel, I think, is more of one at a township road level or something like that. So we haven't gotten into that, but I know some communities have discussed that with some local streets.
I mean, I'm thinking of far-flung state routes, sections of them. Mm-hmm. And specifically, if you have done any professional studies or thought about doing any professional studies, maybe this is not your thing to lay on your shoulders. Maybe it's not appropriate. I apologize if it's not. I'm just asking.
Yeah.
I don't mean to imply that it is your job.
Right.
I really don't. But studies of the savings, potential savings, where corners can be cut and money saved to supply those things to poorly resourced townships who sort of, you know, assume, I think, that things will always be paved, that things will never go back to earth, that the money will always be there.
Yeah.
And maybe it's time to start telegraphing that that might not always be the case.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a right.
Right. Yeah, I mean, we haven't done anything that, you know, that detailed or specific regarding that. But I think you're definitely right on point that that might be a, you know, the costs of just preserving what we have are $2.5 billion just to preserve things the way they are. So I think, you know, and based on that and the local situations, I think that is a reality. We have not done anything like that. You know, we've heard discussions about that, but have not really gotten very involved in it. But we probably could provide, I would say if the funding issues got worse and worse, I think that probably would be something that we would have to look into. But my guess is for state routes especially, ODOT, you know, at this point has no plans of trying to let them go. I think we've seen a lot of the chip and seal type approach where it's fill potholes, grind it down an inch, repay. You know, there's a lot of different steps before I'd say you have to give up the road or put it back to gravel or anything like that. But as far as analysis, I haven't seen any.
Okay.
I just had a quick question. You and I had talked about this, and I'm probably going to miss and not making sure I got back to you, but in the Beacon Journal here in recent weeks, there was a mention about the governor's plans about taxation and revenue issues. And one thing that caught my eye was he was talking about making a cut in the Summit County transit tax. Had you had a chance to check that out?
I didn't. I forwarded that email that I got back from Dean to you. I wonder if it didn't go through off to me. Because like, he did. Yeah, Metro did respond to our inquiry. And his response was that actually the way that it's set up right now, they actually gained some revenue based on some of the commitments the governor was making to, like it was somehow, and this is where I'm a little leery on the details, but somehow he was committing that sales, he would like this, that transit agencies would get almost 10% growth, like guaranteeing some kind of growth factor that when the RTAs looked at it, and Metro in particular, they actually thought they were going to receive more funds with the new structure than less funds with the new structure. However, he did mention that there were other things related to, he said not monetary, but other more policy type issues that they weren't so keen on. But overall, from a funding perspective, he said that they did not anticipate that it would reduce their ability and actually kind of thought that they might receive more funds for that. I'll look back and make sure I forwarded that to you, though, because he did respond, and I thought I did, but maybe I sent it to the wrong address or something. So.
Well, I'll go back and look for it. Do you remember about when?
It was a couple days after you called me, so I can look and see if I can find the original.
If I can't find it,
give me a call otherwise. But he seemed pretty positive overall about that element of it.
Well, what I was concerned about is back in 2008, if you recall, there was an issue 8, which was a hard-fought issue to get a 0.25% increase in the countywide sales tax specifically aimed at transit. And because of that funding, we've been able to, you know, rotate the fleet. We've been able to do a lot of good things with public transit here in the AMATS area. And I saw something in the Beacon Journal where, you know, you don't get the whole story in a newspaper article, but it talked about a cut in this particular sales tax. And so I was, of course, naturally concerned that would translate immediately into a loss of revenue for Metro RTA. So I had asked Curtis to investigate that. And I think it's still something we need to keep our eye on, because we've really fought hard to have a good, viable public transportation system here, even though I'd like to see rail and growth in that area. We do have a good system. It serves a lot of people, and we need to not slip in terms of quality of service and equipment.
And Mike, if I can add just a little bit, I don't know if Krista touched on it, I might have missed it, but from the transit priorities, you know, a big part of that is funding some of the rail infrastructure that we do have, getting it up to the code where we could have freight movement on that rail. And then I think, you know, in Metro's grand scheme, it is preserving that corridor for passenger rail eventually. I think even Metro has said, look, we don't think it's going to happen in the next 25 years, but we want to ensure that the corridors are preserved. And so AMAT's part of the plan is those recommendations to make sure those critical bridges and critical infrastructure of the rail line are preserved.
Well, I'll be down below making snowballs.
That's a positive outlook.
Go ahead, Ms. Beniston, one question, which I hope won't take.
Go ahead, Mr. Snowpick.
Mm-hmm. I don't know anything about economics, but you know, there's a lot of drama in the news about whether there'll be inflation or whether there won't be inflation.
Mm-hmm.
How much time do you have to spend worrying about whether inflation predictions are accurate?
You know, the plan has to be fiscally constrained, you know, so we estimate how much revenue we think we're going to get. And a lot of that, ODOT does projections, You know, and so we've used their projections, I think, for the next 5 to 6 years. And after that, I think we do 2.5%, which is relatively conservative. But, I mean, so we do, you know, we look at different projections that, you know, Jobs and Family Services that ODOT did, and, you know, kind of sort of estimate where we think we are. And then we also did, I don't know if you remember, I believe it was in the summer, we did a population and employment projections forecast. And so, you know, that's also, we, you know, specifically look at those two. So, I mean, you know, and so inflation is factored into those. You know, I think it's always sort of a, you know, a little bit of a game. But, you know, we do our best to project what revenues we have, you know, out to 2035. And then take the, you know, our best estimate of current year costs and, you know, estimate those out to 2035. And then kind of pick, you know, what year's projects are estimated to be completed in. And that's how we do our financial forecast. You know, so inflation is taken into, you know, for sure it's taken into and, you know, consideration. And then projects, you know, in almost double if you do them current year versus 2035. So, you know, you're just, our purchasing power, you know, diminishes significantly. And I think that's where we just have less projects overall.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, we use ODOT's numbers for the first 4 years, and then, you know, one of the things is that we complain about to the feds is we say this requirement doesn't allow you to plan, because in a way you're so, you know, the your purchasing power so quickly that we were having a hard time getting key project, you know, for a planning document. If you put yourself under a lot of if you inflate, say you have like, say we estimated 5% inflation per year, we would have no purchasing power. We wouldn't even be able to show that we could fund our existing system. So ODOT and the federal government and us have all, and all the other MPOs have worked to kind of smooth that out and say, you know what, let's just, we need to put some sort of inflationary cost on it. Call it 2.5%. It's fair. Might be a little low, might be a little high, but at least we know. And so I would say from the last plan, like Krista was saying, it definitely reduces our purchasing power and what we think we can fund. But at this point, it still allows us to have a pretty nice program for the plan.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Do we need a motion on this particular draft?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. We have no further questions or discussion. We'll entertain motions for approval of this draft as submitted at the present time.
So moved.
Okay, we have a motion from Ms. Kessler.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a second from Mr. Baker. Any discussion on the motion? There is none. All those in favor of accepting the draft transportation outlook to 2035 is submitted at this time in draft form, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. We'll now move to the other major topic under item 4, which is the draft of the 2014-2017 Transportation Improvement Program. This, of course, is basically our working document throughout the short-term in the next few years, and it's an evolving document, it's a work in progress, but right now we, under attachment 4A, have a second draft of the projects list, and further information is going to be provided by Curtis.
So we talked about this at the last meeting. We had the first draft. This is the second draft. Basically, through this time, we've been reviewing with communities to make sure that the projects contained in this list are accurate. Then ODOT also is doing the same thing on the state side. They sent us an updated list, which then we also updated into our list. So this is really the second draft. I think, like I said last time, we are going to be, you know, just we're asking communities to look through it, make sure it meets, you know, what they think they've got in the TIP. Krista mentioned we're going to have the planned public meetings. They're also going to be joint TIP meetings to go over this document on April 8th and April 19th. So basically, I think, you know, from the public perspective, like Mike was saying, this really is the short-term planning document. This is where federal funds are going to be spent in the next 4 years. So it's really important that we have this accurate and that it includes everything that has federal funds. We will be continuing to review it. It will go for final approval in May. There is a little bit of a blurb in the memo regarding the fact that, you know, one of the things AMATS has done to ensure that we spend all our funds is over-program. One of the issues with over-programming, though, getting back to the whole fiscal constraint thing, is if we're saying that we're going to fund more projects than we have money for, technically we're not in fiscal constraint. So one of the things that we had to do was move some projects from 2017 out to the out year of 2018, just so we would still be constrained, showing that the amount of revenue we expect in the next 4 years will be the amount of costs we incur. Obviously, the point of overprogramming, we've talked about this before, is to ensure that if a project falls and isn't completed on time, there's another project in its place that can use those funds immediately, so we don't have these large carryover balances. So that's the purpose of overprogramming, but for the TIP, we do have to show fiscal constraints. So some projects that have been recently approved have actually been taken out of the TIP and are assumed to be done in 2018, 1 year after the TIP. So it's a little confusing, I apologize, but it's sort of another way that we've kind of been able to ensure some flexibility in terms of funding. That's really all I have.
Okay. Thanks, Curtis. Mm-hmm. I would advise and urge the members to both keep copies handy of these drafts and also the TIP once it's finalized, because that's going to be the evolving document. We'll be asked throughout our meetings for the next few years to consider different resolutions that will alter the TIP, so it's really important to keep up with it as the modifications that are necessary do get made. We'll also have an opportunity to attend public meetings involving the TIP, so please make plans to attend both the Akron and Kent meetings if you can, or at least make one of them. I think it's going to be important, and also I think help people that don't make meetings like this on a regular basis to better understand the process that goes on and how their tax dollars are spent. So please plan on making the meetings here at the Akron Library and the Kent Library if at all possible. Now, we've been asked also to approve this draft form, the second draft. So at this time, we'll entertain motions for that action.
I'll move that.
We have a motion from Ms. Kessler.
I'll second.
We have a second from Mr. Mackey. Any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all is in favor. Mr. Mackey.
Just to make things explanatory for a simple citizen, the second draft 4A references all the PIDs down the left-hand side. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it shows what year it's going to happen. And then I have this attachment 3C, the TIP program as of a certain date. And then it also has PIDs down the left-hand column. Mm-hmm. Are the two tied together? Are they two separate programs?
No, those are the funding in 3C is basically the whole program out, I believe, till, do we have, what's the final year on that? Is it still 2017?
This is, yeah.
Okay, so
14 to 17.
Yeah, so those should, I wasn't sure if we had 2018 in there. Hmm. But, yes, all those projects should be represented in this TIP.
So it's two documents.
Right. But that is really more of the working document that our staff updates basically every day, depending on what we hear from ODOT. The TIP is the more permanent document that we are always amending and have resolutions for. But the two should coincide.
Okay. I wasn't having any luck finding one PID matching another in the appropriate year. So I just wondered, is it like two separate programs?
Yeah, no, they're the same programs. If there is a PID that's missing, it might be in an out year, like it might be in 2018, which isn't on that chart, that might have been you know, it might not be included in the TIP, but might be on that element. And then it also just depends sometimes, too, on how recently Victor updated that spreadsheet versus what we have in the TIP. And the other one thing is that document, the landscape or the 11 by 17, only has funds that have AMATS funds in it, but there are projects in the TIP
that have
ODOT. Yeah, it's like there are ODOT projects that have federal dollars in it. So there might be some projects in the TIP that you don't see on that table because they're funded through ODOT. Yeah.
I have a suggestion for the upcoming citizens' review of this.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps some members remember this. Way back when AMATS was advertising these meetings, I made an observation about how small the meeting notice was. And you remember the other half of that. The meeting that was published lately in the Beacon Journal was very nice, very large, easy to read. But I think it would escape the notice of most people because it didn't impact them correctly for what the CIC does. I would propose the idea that you take this list of programs on the TIP, just like the City of Akron does with delinquent tax payments, or just like other people do with other legal documents, that you buy a quarter page, and maybe not put the whole thing out. Put out 2014, 2013's done. But people may read the meeting notice for the citizens' input, for people to come and review this, and they may see something on, in this case, the 2014 list of attachment 3C, that says, oh, I didn't know they were going to do that to my street, or the next street over, or in my city, or on that bridge. I was looking especially for the comment in the paper for the Stowe engineer said he may close the ramps to Graham Road Bridge on Route 8 while they're doing repairs on the Graham Road Bridge, and I really didn't see that. It didn't pop out to me that, you know, we're going to close the ramps down here. The impact on the people is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
If you're going to close the street, if you're going to, you know, do something that's going to divert traffic, there might be a better way to get public interest attending and looking at these things. I've heard that comment made at several meetings. People didn't even know about AMATS, CIC,
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, the biggest issue that we face is that newspaper ads are incredibly expensive.
Well,
you know, the ad that we put in the paper is about $1,000. And one of the...
I had no answer for that. Try Twitter.
So, you know, a quarter page ad is more closer to $5,000 now than a grand. So we've tried to get the most bang for our buck out of the newspaper. But you're right. One of the things that we really struggle with is, you know, getting people to understand that some of these things that we do have impacts and will have impacts in the short term. Maybe not this summer, but next summer or the summer after that or the construction season after that. So your point's well taken, but I think we do have to figure out a way to make this list more accessible. My guess is that we probably can't afford to put it in the paper, but maybe getting it online, tweeting it, doing those things.
All this is available on the electronic attachments that I read. But,
right.
But I'm looking at, and I don't know the cost, if you just take 2014 and you just have the name of it, forget the PID number, the name of it, and who's going to do it, forget the cost and everything else, and say this is what's affecting you, and you put it below that notice, which I assume you're going to publish in the paper and elsewhere, that attend the meeting, we're talking about your streets. We could sort of change the heading of that little block up there.
Yeah.
Just more punch. I realize you're not marketing people, you're not engineering people, but there are ways to get a message over.
There's a maybe a little bit lower cost method, too. Talk to the Beacon and just do a news release.
Not
true.
And get them to. Yeah.
And
we will do press releases. Sometimes we get shoved to the, the lower parts of the paper that are the unread. But we will do press releases, and Bill, that's a good idea, is that we'll maybe we need to include in there a list of
something
projects.
Something that'll draw people if they look at
right.
the big sign. We're going to tear up your road. See this book.
Right.
Right. Interested? Come
we're going to cause Mr. trouble.
Becky.
Yeah. Whatever. Something that people will mm-hmm. attend
yeah.
if it affects them.
Yeah.
You haven't told a lot yeah. of people mm-hmm. how it affects them.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Along the same lines with the news release, if you tell them you're going to spend $200 million, you might get darn near close to front page
yeah.
coverage of that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We'll try. We will. I think we'll include the list in the project in the press release. Definitely have the
make
money
sure it's small.
Amounts. Yeah.
Don't give them too much info.
We won't give them that whole sheet. But yeah.
Here's what we're gonna do next year.
Yeah. Last time we got Bob Dyer to write something, it was on our sidewalk inventory. It was very positive. And I still have that article hanging up on my wall because Bob Dyer wrote something about us that was positive.
Again, going back to what the AMAPS is set up to do and coordinate this and that, I think that pedestrian sidewalk program is mm-hmm. sorely needed in our community. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we have a motion and a second on the floor. Any other discussion? There is none. All those in favor of accepting the second draft projects list as submitted for the fiscal year 2014-2017 transportation improvement program, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Under item four, we still have a discussion item, which is the transportation budget priorities. With ODOT forming a new transportation budget, I'll let Curtis go ahead and mm-hmm. provide us some input on that.
Yeah, and this, I can't do it justice. Jason, as many of you know, is very, very passionate about this topic, and he put together a lot of talking points that he wanted to talk to the two committees about, TAC and Policy Committee. And I have his notes, but I want to try to touch on some of the key themes that he's trying to get across, especially to our policy committee regarding some of the state transportation funding priorities and some of the main things that I think we're discussing. So the first thing on there is the Ohio Turnpike and the state transportation budget. And with the Ohio Turnpike, one of the things the staff found when we reviewed that KPMG study about bonding the turnpike was that we felt overall that that was still a pretty decent proposal compared to, say, leasing the turnpike. Now, we still have questions because, obviously, the devil's in the details on these projects, and one of the things that we're a little concerned about is that we keep talking about we're going to have an additional $1.5 billion of funds, but we've already estimated that just to reconstruct the turnpike, which is needed throughout the whole state, is going to be over $3 billion. Over the next 25 years just to maintain the existing turnpike as is. So, you know, one of the things we're talking about all this additional revenue, but at the same time, there are going to be these additional costs in terms of making sure the turnpike stays the way it is.
But isn't the turnpike basically an independent business entity? Aren't they supposed to have tolls structured to take into consideration?
Yes.
Costs like this?
They are, and I think overall they could maintain, you know, they would be able to do that. However, with the additional bonding, you know, with the turnpike is basically going to be collecting tolls, a lot of that money will be to pay the debt service on these new bonds. So by doing that, part of the money that we get from those bonds needs to be used in the turnpike. And that's where our staff feels a little bit concerned about, are we going to have enough money to fix the turnpike, pay off the debt service, and continue to do the projects that ODOT's talking about? Sorry, Mike, I know that's not very clear, but does that at least give you...
Well, if I hear what you're saying, they're going to use the turnpike, the power of the borrowing...
The borrowing power of the
turnpike.
Of
the turnpike mm-hmm. to put this money elsewhere mm-hmm. in the state.
Yes, now... The governor has said 90% of that extra money will go towards Northeast Ohio. And when it got to, now right now we're doing a state transportation budget. You might have read some stuff about it. The state's been very leery about putting that in writing. The state Senate made them put it in writing. So the state Senate amended the transportation budget to say 90% of those funds have to go within 75 miles north or south of the turnpike or closer. They also said at that point, the other thing that they did was said that there had to be a rational nexus to the turnpike. While that hasn't exactly been defined, it's been at least stated and amended into this current budget. Now, the problem with that, though, is that a budget bill, the governor has line item veto. So it's actually kind of creating a political issue where the governor could take out the, you know, must spend 90% of those funds on the turnpike, but he'd have to basically veto it, and by vetoing it, he'd be going against his word of what he said he would do with the turnpike revenues. So it's sort of creating this showdown between the representatives, the Senate, and the governor, and we're still not sure how that's going to play out exactly. So that's one of the things we're watching in the short term.
I will tell you that there are a lot of trucks, especially, which are getting off the turnpike in the northeastern Ohio area at exit 173 or exit 161, and they are using surface roads like our expressway, particularly 76, to dodge the tolls that they would have to pay on the turnpike. So not only do they wear out, you know, prematurely the highways that we're paying for here locally, but number two, they're creating a, what I think is a tremendous hazard when mixing with the automobile traffic.
Right. Well, and it's actually kind of a perfect segue to the other issue that has been being discussed in this is the 80,000-pound limit of trucks increasing to 90,000. AMATS, and Bill had emailed us earlier about this, AMATS is opposed to the idea of increasing. That amendment was taken out of the Senate bill and or out of the bill entirely, but there is a huge concern that, Mike, kind of like what you were saying, is if we add another 10,000 pounds to truck weight, and then we do this stuff with the turnpike, so eventually all these trucks are going to be getting off at local roads and going to be doing a heck of a lot of damage to our whole state infrastructure system. All the county engineers in the state have been opposed to that. We're opposed to that, and it looks like that is dead for the moment. But I think that so that's another issue that comes in, is like the weight of these trucks does a lot of damage to the rest of our infrastructure. And I think that's why it's really important that if this money does happen, it's within 75 miles of the turnpike. So at least we can use those funds to improve any damage that these trucks have. But we've heard a lot of concerns from the mayors in these communities, especially in Streetsboro, Hudson, Richfield area, that have a lot of concerns about, are these trucks going to start bypassing? I mean, and 14, State Route 14 in Portage County is probably the best example of where you really can, you know, by just cutting around, getting off of 14 and, you know, cutting down to 76, you can save yourself a good, you know, good couple bucks for sure.
Well, if you're talking 10,000 pounds additional weight in a truck, I mean, it brings to mind stopping distance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a safety hazard.
All sorts of things. Mm-hmm. Tires, tire capacities and things like this. I don't know, it's just not a good deal for the average tax-paying motorist, I guess.
Right, and I think that's another thing that I know Jason wanted to express to our committees was that, you know, we, right now, our population is growing 46th fastest in the United States out of 50, so it shows you how quickly we're growing. And, you know, I think there's a lot of concern that some of the talk about this turnpike money is that we're just going to, you know, build all these brand new projects and we're going to do all this stuff that we haven't done. But, you know, in our staff's mind, the most important element of this is fix it first. And that if we are going to get additional funds, they have to go into maintaining the system, not building new expansion projects, congestion, you know, capacity adding projects, things like that.
Shucks, there goes the high speed train.
Well, yeah. But, well, that also gets into another point is that, you know, the other question we raise is that should some of that money be considered for transit improvement? You know, is there any reason that we can't consider transit in this? Because right now, ODOT's kind of saying, we're going to take all this extra turnpike money and we're going to put it in the track program, which is the major new, which is the, you know, Brent Spence Bridge, Central Interchange, I-70-170 type large new expansion projects. And what we were kind of saying is that that might not be the best thing to put all of our eggs in that basket because we have such a maintenance need and preservation need in the system. Also, you know, I think one of the things that we're concerned about is that it appears like, especially this ODOT in particular, is sort of starting to operate in sort of like a 1990s pre-Great Recession mode, that we're a little concerned that they are trying to do too much. You know, they're looking at all these major new investments and the maintenance elements not as big of a priority for new funds. One of the things that we're really concerned about is that, or the one thing that comes up is that, you know, we're the 7th largest state in population. We have the 12th, we're the 12th largest state in transit ridership, and yet we're 47th in the state in public transit funding. So the state, you know, we basically, states like Alaska, probably one of the Dakotas, spends more at the state level on transit than the state of Ohio does. This came up in the budget hearings. A couple of congressmen and from the Cleveland area brought this up. And, you know, ODOT had a very defiant attitude towards, you know, I mean, where we actually, they admitted that they've left federal money on the table because they haven't had enough state funding to match those federal dollars for transit. And we, as an agency, feel like that's just absolutely the wrong thing to do.
Well, the current governor sent $400 million back.
Right, for the 3C
to the federal project. Government for a rail project that would have helped the state get off the ground as far as viable rail service.
Yeah.
The money was sucked up by other rail projects around the country, and now those people are benefiting from that funds, the funds that could have been spent right here in Ohio.
Right. And so I think we've, you know, we're continuing to see that kind of thought pattern, and it's one of the things our agency really feels strongly that if, you know, the state, when they're talking about these windfall dollars from the turnpike, well, we'd like to see some increase in the transit funding and increase in multimodal funding. So, you know, this is one thing that I think Jason feels really strongly about, our staff feels really strongly about, and we wanted to bring to the committees, and especially our policy committee, because I think our goal is to get them talking about these issues and maybe trying to, you know, move the rock a little bit further in terms of, you know, what the state priorities are, because we want to make sure that at a regional level, we have a voice in how these turnpike monies will be spent and how the state funds are spent. So that's really the bulk of that. It was just an oral item. There was no, you know, action that needed to be taken. Yeah, Dustin.
We know of the Central Interchange and a few of these bridge projects. Mm-hmm. Are there any major expressway projects that they maybe they're trying to bring back, like 73? I know there was Interstate 73.
Like new, brand new?
Brand new.
Not like that. The ones that are on their radar are the 271 widening from, you know, Macedonia up through, I don't know how far north it goes, but basically the whole 271.
Get rid of that traffic in the morning.
Right, basically eliminate, you know, that's one of the projects that's on their radar. Other elements of the Central Interchange project, like the Kenmore leg and I-76 to 21, that's on their radar if these funds do come to pass. And then obviously things like the Brent Spence Bridge in Cincinnati. You know, because, I mean, what they're going to do, no matter what, if they get, you know, they could very easily say we're going to spend 90% of the turnpike funds in Northeast Ohio, put those turnpike funds in Northeast Ohio, but then just take other ODOT funds that were going to go to Northeast Ohio and move them to the south. So, I mean, in a way, like, I think part of us feels like it's sort of semantics because ODOT, it's a shell game in a way. What it does is it provides an extra $1.5 billion to ODOT. You know, whether they take some money out of what they thought they were going to spend on us and put it to the south or put it in Columbus or whatever. But I have not heard of any new freeway projects or, you know, the idea of the Inner Belt going through to Kent, you know, like the hitting up with 260, I don't know if anyone's ever seen that plan, like 59 in the inner belt that goes to, connects to Route 8. So one's plan is to continue that all the way to Kent and hook up with 260. That's why 261 in Kent's a divided highway, because there was at one time a plan for that to be a full expressway.
Like 44.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, things like that are, I don't think, on the books.
Well, I was more, I believe around Toledo, Columbus, and then Columbus to Chillicothe, there was a Route 73 project.
Mm. I haven't heard anything
about
that.
5 years ago, and that would be within the 70-some mile range.
Yeah. Well, that's what's really interesting, actually, is that because the turnpike dips south, like Steubenville is within 75 miles of the turnpike. You wouldn't think so, because, you know, when 76 and 80 cross and the turnpike goes south by Youngstown, it actually goes south enough that, you know, so when we're talking about 75 miles, you're talking about New Philadelphia, Steubenville. You're talking about more than one-third of the state.
Is that in Ohio?
Steubenville? Yeah. Yeah. Some people would question if it is. Yeah.
Well, why don't we, unless anybody else has anything, why don't we continue on? We have an interesting topic to talk about, and we should leave ample time to discuss it, and that is the payment condition, the RAID data collection system. I think this warrants a lot of interesting discussion. Again, it's new technology that's available. And if anybody has any further discussions about transportation budget priorities, I'd like to move on to item 5, which is 5A is the payment condition rating collection system. And I'll let Curtis go ahead and elaborate on that.
This one is actually, I mean, I think, you know, Mike, you kind of alluded to it. It's a really big deal. Might not seem like a big deal, but I think there is a lot of importance here for setting a certain precedent. You know, we've talked about this. ODOT traditionally collected pavement condition ratings for the federal classification system and all state routes. They informed us that they're no longer going to do that. One of our big funding components out of our surface transportation program is funding resurfacing projects in line with sort of our preservation goal. In order for us to score resurfacing projects, we use pavement condition ratings to determine which roads deserve to be funded. So ODOT sort of pulled the rug out and said, look, we're not going to do this anymore, so you're not going to have any data. You know, we discussed this a lot with our communities, and the big thing that we came out of through a bunch of subcommittees with our TAC TIP subcommittee, we had a PCR subcommittee, and basically the community said, we think it'd be a great idea if we get together jointly and try to take advantage of economies of scale and do a joint purchase of this service for the entire AMATS region. It went through two subcommittees. It went to TAC. TAC approved this this afternoon. And now it goes to policy committee. And really what we're talking about is using AMAT's funds to pay for doing a pavement condition index for all of the federal classified roads in our region, but also allowing each community to have the ability to buy in for their local streets. So what you can see, these tables, they can get a little confusing, but each table shows kind of the different steps. So if we just did the federal aid, that's table 1. If a community decided that they wanted to do the federal aid and the state routes incorporated to their area, that's the second table of how much they would pay. The third would be if they wanted to do every local street in the region. Basically, AMATS is going to pay for 80% of this. The communities that are required to make up the local share. Summit County is a huge supporter of this idea, and they've offered to be the fiscal agent, which means that Summit County will work with us to basically contract with a vendor to do these types of pavement condition index.
How would that work with Portage County?
They would basically be invoiced. So okay. Portage County would be required to pay their local share to Summit County. you know, I can't say enough good things about this project from the standpoint of, like, we're talking potentially 30% savings to all the communities that are already doing this work. You know, we're going to be able to take 30% off the top by incorporating a two-county region just through economies of scale. You know, I think that overall, you know, the major communities like Akron, the Falls, large communities like Hudson are interested in this. We think we've got enough buy-in to make it happen. And so now it's really just talking to our policy committee to say, are you guys willing to make the financial commitment? Because the worst case scenario, the local dues will go up by table one. And then if anybody else, if the communities want to expand on that, they can pay additional funds to do so. So the idea is that, you know, this will cost, it'll cost Akron an extra less than $3,000 a year to have over 141 miles be logged, cataloged with their pavement conditioning index every 2 years. So
every 2 years required?
Yes. Well, it's not required, but because our funding, because we do funding on a 2 year basis, it's important to have that update.
Can we do it for 2 years, skip 2 years, and go on the next 2 years?
Well,
do the roads change that much in 2 years once they're surveyed?
I believe they do because of the winter. I think it has a pretty large effect. And some communities do it every 3 years. You might get away with that, but enough of our communities do it every 2 years that was sort of the you know, where the most communities were comfortable, where they'd say, we would go through you instead of doing it ourselves.
And as I understand the notes, this is not a buy, this is just a rental program where you go out to a company and pay them. And
right,
come
it's
in
basically a consultant, a contract.
And I asked
with
for
the
pictures, but you weren't able to supply any.
No, I know, we really
messed
it down.
In time for the policy committee, maybe if you had, you know, we're buying a pig. To me, I'm buying a pig in a poke. I can't see anything.
Yeah.
I'm looking for something to see. Oh, this is what a fire truck looks like, or this
right.
is what an Amish buggy looks
right.
like.
Right.
Show me something, you know, the old Missouri, show me.
Yeah.
I think that'd be better if we had something to show and say, this is what the technology is and what's being used.
Right. One of the things, I think it's also in your packet, is showing the existing maps of the pavement condition ratings.
Yes.
You guys have those? So that kind of shows you the kind of data we'd be hoping to get. It'd be a lot more detailed than that. The segments would be a lot shorter than what ODOT gives us. And that was one of the biggest complaints about the ODOT system is they would do it every, I can't remember what the distance was, but a lot greater distance than what the communities were comfortable with. So this is going to give us a lot of data, and it's going to give us the ability to benchmark kind of where we are this year, 2 years from now. You know, how many of our roads are this level and worse? You know, and we can see, are we doing better? Are we doing worse? I think it gives us a lot of flexibility and information that we need to make a lot of funding decisions. With that, I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Well, I'm just wondering, once you have the data, is that proprietary to who?
That's a good question.
Anybody look at it once it gets put up on the web?
If
you want to bid on a road, or does Summit County keep it, hold it secure, and they let a contract say, we want to
right.
bid this road, and people come in without...
If we use STP funds, which is the plan, it has got to be transparent.
Okay.
So we have got to share that data with anybody that wants it.
All right.
And that would be the intent. You know, the intent would be to have maps like the one in the packet, but even greater detail on the website, listing, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we really think we could do some pretty cool stuff with it in terms of, because one of the things that is included in here that is good for communities is it gives you projections, you know. The pavement looks like this now. If I didn't do anything for 10 years, you know, what would the pavement look like 10 years from now? What would its rating be? And it does all sort of simulations that allow communities to help with their capital budgeting programs.
The county recorder's office is very popular. People come in here all the time to research stuff. I think maybe the secretary of AMAT should be ready for a flood of paving contractors to come in.
Yeah. Yeah,
you may become a very popular spot down there in East Florida.
Hey, well, we already are.
I know.
the money that would be spent on this service or whatever, somewhere are we? Do we or you pay ODOT in a way for what they had been doing and now are discontinuing? I mean, is there some sort of offset there?
Not really. I mean, were you
getting it for free from ODOT?
We were essentially getting it for free. And now we've got to pay for
it. Maybe if they want the data, you could sell it to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, we've looked at trying to contract with ODOT, but they're sort of, ODOT's kind of, I think, looking at statewide possibilities. So they've got they're even a bigger fish. So, like, there's no economy of scale for them to say, oh, we'll work with AM. You know, it's more like for us, we could attach to them. But if we pick a vendor, ODOT's not going to say, oh, well, we should pick that same vendor, too.
Holmes County doesn't have an MPO.
No.
So who would do the data survey in Holmes County? ODOT?
ODOT will maintain the state routes. And in a county like Holmes, that's pretty much, it's all township, you know, so it's basically all the data they need.
Okay. Well, without pictures or a video or a machine salesman or anything else to show us further how this works or what it is, what it looks like, do we have any motion for approval to confirm AMAC's pursuing the agreement to this agency?
Mr. Chairman, I think that Attachment 5A, proposal for regional PCR data collection program, is an excellent program. I move we approve that.
We have a motion for Mr. Mackey. We have a second for Mrs. Kessler. Okay. Any further discussion on the motion? All those in favor of recommending that approval that AMATS pursue a payment condition rating system and the necessary technology, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. That concludes items under item 5. Under item 6, we have three attachments that are resolutions for amendments to the PIP. Resolution 2013-01, 02, and 03. And each of these is an attachment in your packets. You want to take time to review these and make a motion. We have made it our custom at times to bundle these attachments and resolutions and make motions collectively so that one motion would take action on all three resolutions.
I move that we accept all three resolutions.
All right. We have a motion from Ms. Kessler. And is that a second? From Mr. Baker to bundle resolutions 2013-01, 02, and 03. Any further discussion on the motion?
Mr. Chair, I want to commend the city of Akron for this Safe Routes to School program. I think all the communities and that should be communicated to the policy committee that every community should be entering this program and doing this for the students. Also, I think 6C, the ODOT award program, is a plus for our transit system. Mm-hmm. My only question on 6B is Greg Fuller Park Bridge and the Frederick Bridge. How come all these bridges popped up all of a sudden? Is that ODOT's thing, the bridge replacement program, or is that something else?
Boy, that's a good question.
I mean, you don't want to be driving on and have it fall in like happened in 10 years ago.
Yeah, and I think these are all just, my understanding was that they're all just revisions of scope so that they were, projects already existed, but it's more somehow the scope was changed mm-hmm. and the funding elements of it changed a little bit, but not like they're out of the blue, this bridge is falling down.
So. All right, thank you.
We have a motion and a second on the floor regarding resolutions 2013-01, 02, and 03. Any further discussion on these? Hearing none, all those in favor of accepting the motion to approve all three resolutions, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carried. Also under other business, in the back of the practices folder, there was a template or a couple pages on a subject, Vibrant NEO 2040. Looking at the agenda, I don't see anything.
I can talk about it briefly if you want.
Okay.
I think we've discussed the NEO SCC, which is the Northeast Ohio Sustainable Communities Consortium. You know, previously kind of updates.
That's
you know the large Northeast Ohio grant to do you know essentially a comprehensive plan for the 12 county Northeast Ohio area. So one thing that they have done, they have about 10 months left of their they have a 3-year grant period, so they're in the final year. One thing they're doing right, kind of at the final, is they've hired a consultant and they'll be doing scenario planning. You know, so this is sort of the kickoff to that process. So essentially what scenario planning is, you know, it just really looks at all the data that they have gathered to this point. You know, almost similar to what we've been doing for our regional transportation plan, but, you know, for more topics on a regional scale. So looking at, you know, what are the land use trends? What are the population, employment, environment, funding, all those kind of things. And then also, you know, sort of doing different projections. So if, you know, we stay on the exact same route, what will our, you know, finances, land use, like where will we be in 20, say, you know, 40? Or what if we, you know, keep sprawling or vice versa? What if we, you know, go more to a transit, sustainable alternatives route? So what they're going to be doing is having a series of public meetings, you know, to sort of get input and, you know, what is the path that Northeast Ohio wants to take. And I believe the dates for those public meetings are listed on the second sheet. And then what they'll do is get input from those and go through and develop, you know, kind of what is the preferred scenario. And then they'll come back later this summer and present those findings for further feedback. So I think they're, let's see, in our area, some in Portage is at May 2nd. You know, so if you are available for those, we can certainly put information on our website further to give, you know, the exact locations. But, you know, what they're looking for, you know, is feedback on a lot of these issues, but for the whole 12-county area. So I would be happy to answer any questions. But also, if you have a chance and want to look at further data they've collected, they do have quite a bit on their website for all of Northeast Ohio. But that's something that we've been a part of and you know, can hopefully help if you have any questions.
Is there any potential clash with the MS mission?
You know, I think at this point, I mean, you know, without seeing their findings, I would say no. You know, I mean, we've been pretty, Jason chaired the committee last year, so we have been pretty involved. Up to this point, what they have more is kind of facts and findings. You know, they haven't really made any judgment calls. It's more been, you know, the population is this amount. You know, the projected growth is this. You know, so they haven't really made any policy type calls that would, you know, have, you know, but that would make us, you know, think like how, you know, should AMATS react to this. So at this point, no.
No. No, in fact, even us agreeing to participate and all the MPOs agreeing to participate, one of the caveats was, you know, anything that they do does not directly affect us. We have the authority or the ability to bow out if we don't like what they say.
So the end product will be, you know, I imagine, I think what they've been saying is a set of policy recommendations for Northeast Ohio. And at that point, you know, that's what it is. It's recommendations. And we'll, you know, definitely bring that back to this committee and we can, you know, go from there on if we agree, disagree, if there's anything that we think of value that we want to move forward. But it's completely up to us.
Can we watch for some sort of ad about a meeting on May the 2nd somewhere?
This might be the only ad you'll see.
But unless I don't, you go to the website.
Yeah, unless you go to their website.
Okay.
I don't know if we'll be sending anything out. We might be, but I don't want to say wait for that because I'm not sure.
Do we know where the meeting's going to be at?
This is what we have.
Yeah.
We can make sure that we can get that information and make sure it's on like
my
our meeting
it
calendar.
It hasn't been determined.
But it's just the date.
They're not as together as we are.
So right now, this is sort of an FYI.
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like a save the date. Yeah. It's pretty much
there's
what this is.
Meeting somewhere.
Yeah.
On that night. And I know it will be from, I believe, like 6:30 to 8:30. So it's in the evening, if that helps at all. And somewhere in Summit and Portage County.
Well, speaking of meeting dates, don't forget our next meeting for CIC will be Thursday, May the 9th, 7 p.m. right here in this meeting room, according to the agenda anyway. So hopefully all you can make it. Thanks for coming tonight.
But Mike, if I can just throw, one thing that is going to happen. We are going through certification, FHWA certification. They're going to come at 6 o'clock. We're gonna have CIC still at 7, but we're gonna have the feds want to have a separate public meeting at 6 to just find out if there's anything people think the MPO could be doing better or anything like that. And I think we've gone through this a couple years ago. We did this, but so actually at 6 p.m. we'll have it, and there'll be multiple ads, and we'll definitely let you know about this, but at 6, the feds are going to hold a public meeting at the same location for an hour where they're just going to talk about federal priorities and then also, you know, get feedback on how you feel the Akron metropolitan planning process is being undertaken. So we'd love to have you come at 6, but I honestly, I know that's a long night, so appreciate any time that you can give us, but wanted to let you know that that will be coming down the pipe.
All right, great. I'd like to, before we formally adjourn, I'd like to go around the table and just find out what might be on your minds before we close. Mr. Kalish, any comments, questions?
No, not really.
Okay. Audrey, anything?
No.
I have a couple of technical questions for the staff. For their engineering section.
It's not us.
But you can carry the
messenger. Can be the messenger.
Okay. Do you want to express it? Or
no, I'll just talk to them after the meeting.
Okay.
I have a Manaway specific question if you have time, which is probably best left for after you.
Okay.
Library closed.
I was going to say, we'll get to
that.
Short.
Mr. Reagan?
No.
Okay. Mr. Baker?
I had a question in regards to the meeting location, maybe not for stage in May. Is the Kent Trans facility going to be opening anytime soon? Or we might be able to have a
actually, that
somewhere?
Would be great for summer.
Yeah.
I believe the end of this month, the parking deck will be open for use. And then I believe the end of May is when they are, you know, the entire building should be completed. Like they do have, they'll have, I don't think they've filled it yet, but there'll be retail, and you'll have conference and office space. I know they, at least at this point, haven't announced. They haven't, like, reworked the bus schedule to go through there. So I'm not sure what their date is for, like, a fully operational, you know, bus system that would be based out of there. I think, I'm imagining that's more summer, like, they haven't still announced that. But I believe end of May is when the facility should be completed, fully operational, as far as, you know, like, the structure and all that kind of thing. But I think that's a good point. I know we've met in the Metro Transit Center, but you know, we could probably do the, I forget if it's June or July, but potentially do the meeting there and get a tour of that facility. And then we could also, you know, that whole downtown area right there I think would be great. You know, and that ties into all the other, you know, alternative transportation and kind of design things we've done.
No other comments or questions. We'll go ahead and entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Mackey.
Second.
We have a second for discussion. Discussion of the motion. Hearing none, all those in favor of adjournment at this time, please indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we are adjourned.
Thank you, everyone.